Rabble Radio, recorded on Friday, August 30th, 2024. I'm your host, Brianne Doyle. Thanks so much for tuning in. Rabble's got its finger on the beat of the issues that matter to you. If you're curious about the latest news in Canadian politics, labor, environment, or social justice, you've come to the right place. This is news for the rest of us, free of corporate influence. This week on Rabble Radio, labor reporter Gabriella Kaluge-Kasuga sits down with Mahendra Pandey to talk about his experience as a former migrant worker in Saudi Arabia, as well as his work organizing migrant workers today. Mahendra Pandey is the Senior Manager of Forced Labor and Human Trafficking at Humanity United. In this role, he focuses on the human trafficking and labor migration portfolio. Here are Pandey and Kaluge-Kasuga in conversation. Take a listen.
Thank you so much for joining us on Rabble Radio today.
Thank you for having me.
And just to get started, can you give me a quick summary of what Humanity United is?
Humanity United is US-based private foundations, and we work on peace building and forced labor and human trafficking, racial justice issue, and also some of the work, you know, within the United States and helping community. These are the things we do.
So it's my understanding that this organization kind of came to fruition through your work while taking the Harvard Leadership and Action course. Is that correct?
So when I did Harvard Leadership and Action course, and after that, I was already building the organization called Global Migrant Worker Network. And that was the some of the idea and some of the collaboration partnership with the Harvard University Leadership and Action course led by Marshall Gans. And that is not Human United, that is called Global Migrant Worker Network. And then Global Migrant Worker Network is also supported by Human United.
So can you tell me a bit about how you got involved with the Harvard course and why you chose to, focus on a migrant workers network as your project?
So I'm also a former migrant worker, and I work in Saudi Arabia for 3 years in 2006 to 2009. And then I have been involved and engaging mostly migrant worker organizing, advocacy, and also capacity building of migrant worker. And I had an idea about, you know, what migrant worker need and what organizing looks like, but I didn't know how others is doing and what are the great example, what are the successful example, what could be the models, and how do we go up with some of the challenges, and how do we address, and how do we build up the leadership teams? Those things, and I learned through Harvard, and Harvard that leadership course was a kind of, you know, game changer for me to give the different shape of the Global Migrant Worker Network now.
That's really interesting. Can you tell me a bit about your time as a migrant worker in Saudi Arabia, and what did you experience that inspired you to start taking on this advocacy work?
So I experienced the same experience other millions migrant workers they experience in Middle East and Gulf, and working from the morning to evening, and then being with the very congested accommodations, not having proper and regular salary, not able to go frequently to home and see family, and work on the like very high pressures, and not only that, you know, climate and also psychological pressure as well, to give more times to focus on work and also and do the like, you know, high productive work and those kind of things I experience, and I thought that I would share my experience and so that other migrant workers, they don't have to face similar kind of experience that I had faced. And that was the beginning of the my journey working on the advocacy and the campaign sectors. And since I began this work, and slowly I was able to connect with other civil society leaders, activist leaders, and I got education about how to do organizing, how to do advocacy. And since then, you know, I have been working in these sectors.
Yeah, that's really cool. And I'm curious, so you've done some advocacy and organizing before taking the course. How has your approach kind of changed after taking the course? What had you learned about organizing workers throughout the course that, you know, kind of changed your practice?
So before taking this course, I knew what are the issue that migrant workers face and what are the challenges and what is the problem. But I didn't quite sure about how do we address this. And I knew what part, but after taking that Harvard course now, I have also some little bit of understanding about how part as well. So how part means, you know, how to address problem and how to create a team. And how to build up courage and how to motivate them to join in your campaign and identify who are your people, who are your constituents, and those kind of things. And I learned through Harvard course.
And so what are some of the main issues then that are, you know, agitating the migrant workers that are making them, you know, want to be organized and take up this work?
Since problem is not like individual level, problem is as a community and larger population level. And we need to attract more population to join in our campaign, not only create a power and also create a legitimacy as well. So as soon as we invite more people to join, and as soon as we ask more people to join in our campaign, and that gives more power and also more legitimacy and also more energy as well. So once you see many people join, once you see there is an impact on your campaign, and you feel also happy, and that creates, you know, kind of and, you know, celebration about your campaign and your work. And through Harvard course, and I got idea about how to attract people, how to make them join your campaign, and if something failure, and how to readdress and repair if something, you know, success, and how to celebrate, and how to celebrate not only yourself and how to celebrate together as well.
Yeah, that's really cool. And I think that speaks a lot to, you know, creating like longevity and, you know, in these movements by celebrating the victories, as well as learning how to continue to bring people into the movement so that it's about people power. Kind of on that same thing, I know one of the big events that happened as part of your project was the conference of the Global Workers Network?
Yes, yes.
In Kenya. Yeah, can you tell me a bit about that conference?
The idea about that conference was many times, most often migrant workers, you know, invited in different workshop and conference as a panelist, as a speaker, and just to represent. But there was not such a kind of movement, the conference and workshop, if that is for migrant worker, organized by migrant workers and for migrant workers. The idea about that conference was to give more safe space and hopefully space for migrant workers, them to feel that conference is for them and that conference is by them. And so we had around 250 people, and majority of them were migrant workers from Middle East and Gulf, and them having their country of origins, mostly in South Asia, Southeast Asia, and Africa region. And you could see that conference is not just a conference to talk about migration issue and also to talk about well-being and mental health, and then hope and courage and the leadership of the migrant workers. So that was kind of an extraordinary conference, you know, I have ever attended, and I was fortunate to be part of that and also lead that conference.
And I'm curious, have you kept in touch with any of the attendees of that conference since then? What kind of organizing work have they carried forward after attending that conference?
Once they return their home, they return with hope, courage, and also some inspirations to do more. And what that means, you know, they They share their message to their fellow workers. They try to convince them to join in the moment. And also they understood very clearly that if in order to run the moment, one person cannot do the moment, and it has to be community, it has to be many, many leaders. And also the attendee of the conference, they feel like they are the leader of the leaders. So there are other community leaders in the community, and they feel they are leaders and they are empowered. And also everyone reflecting very positively. And after that conference, many people, they are organizing a similar kind of regional conference, national conference, and community meeting, and are already asking to organize similar kind of conference in next year as well. So after that conference, I can see there is energy, there is enthusiasm, and there is a hope, and at the same time, there is a power and courage as well.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, and that sounds like a really great outcome to come from this. Do you have any specific examples you could talk about of what happened after people had, gotten involved with the network or come to the conference and the kind of organizing they did after getting involved?
So after the conference, first things, they felt they are not alone and they are, part of the moment. That is one. And second thing is they did not also just connected with the people, they connected with the ideas, they connected with the stories as well. And they also felt that was a safe space. That's why they were able to share their own story. They know now how to share their own story, own reflection, and after that, how to be courageous. So now the tone of the conversation before conference and after conference, I can see there is a total difference. Now people, they speak very powerfully, they speak with the courage, and they have a like kind of enjoy speaking. And before, they had a kind of worry. And kind of, I don't want to say the depressed. And I think, there is a kind of disappointment and very sadness. But now I can see, totally different. Maybe you can ask me that, within one conference, and how that is possible to have those kind of changes and differences. That's why I'm saying that this conference was totally different. It was not just a conference, it was a hopeful place.
Yeah, that's really beautiful. And can you tell me a bit of the specifics of what kind of activities or workshops that you hosted that allowed for this hope to happen? Because I think hope is a very important part of activism. And so I'm curious how you were able to foster that hope.
So we had many activities. Like we had a music and cultural performance one side, and another side, and we had also meditations going on, and also singing going on, and spiritual talk, and hopeful talk going on. And many people, they share a story about courageous story, how even though their life was very much darkness, and how they are now finding light after that struggle. And many people, they share their own story about how they become a courageous, how they become a powerful. And also there were many emotions, and after many emotions, there was also clear message that the world need to listen more, and world need to listen more to the survivor and migrant workers. And also them seeing other 200 people sharing similar kind of story, and that gave them, they are not alone. They are, the power of the whole larger powerful moment.
Yeah, that's fair, and that's really beautiful that people were able to have that space to share their stories. So I'm curious, what's next then for the organizing for this kind of work? What campaigns do you have kind of coming down the line? What's kind of the next steps in taking up this work?
So the next step is after the conference, that leadership team was elected by the Democratic Forum. Now there is a leadership team, and they are also building more leader in the community. Now they would like to focus on the structural, formal structure of the network, and they will register this network somewhere in the global south. And they will have their own staff, own office, own team. And this is their, like, you know, first time around 18,000 migrant workers, electing a 90 leadership team and having their own office and own strategy, own program. It is a very, you know, powerful thing to see. And next conference, they would like to focus on more mental health and the well-being of the migrant workers and addressing some of the, you know, trauma healing thing they would like to do. And they would like to work with the many leadership posts like Harvard University. And they would like to also explore more opportunity with the United Nations, ILO, international organizations, journalists and media. Not only share their story and also, you know, share some of the solutions and some of the, like, you know, things that corporations, government and civil society, they should do for the migrant worker.
And can you tell me more then about kind of the mental health work that could be coming up? Like, what is pushing these mental health issues among migrant workers? What is causing these issues?
So because of the COVID and other many things happening around the world, migrant workers populations is also most affected populations, whether climate change, global warming, COVID, global war, or like, you know, whatever things happening around the world. And many peoples, they are requesting us to have therapy, psychosocial counseling, and also, you know, loneliness. And we wanted to make sure that before we jump in the larger advocacy in the campaigns, and we need to also address that first. And then after that, you know, they feel themselves courageous and power. And after that, we can have a, like, you know, very sustainable moment and campaign. So we are also considering and that mental health, addressing mental health and the well-being of the migrant workers and migrant worker leaders is also key.
And so what are some of the solutions that we can pursue as a society to?
You know, there is not like, you know, exact solutions we can offer here. And we are trying to address in a different way. That's how I put it. It means, you know, providing them a meditation course and providing them in a well-being counseling course. And providing them trauma healing course and connecting them with the therapist, and also giving them more, hopeful and inspirational workshop and journey and retreat. And if they need some emergency support, then they can access that resources with the organizations. These are the, like, you know, certain things we have been thinking to address that.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So that's super exciting. It sounds like, you know, the network is in its building phase, and we're looking at maybe a mental health campaign or some type of work surrounding that coming down the line. Is there anything else that people, listeners, could look forward to or could look to get involved and to help support this movement?
One thing, you know, without migrations and without migrant workers, no world can exist these days. So I encourage all the listener and all the people around the world to support and help and trust migrant workers. And migrant workers are also human beings. They are contributing in their society. They are contributing in the national economy. And many millions of migrant workers around the world still they face modern day slavery. They are being trafficked. They are being abused and exploited. And I hope, you know, joining hands by, you know, all the people around the world to address this issue would be key and meaningful. And I encourage everyone to trust and support migrant workers.
Yeah, for sure. And actually, you touched on a good thing. Here in Canada, people have been talking a lot about, you know, the forced slavery and how that affects migrant workers. What do you think the next steps could be to address this exploitation across the world of migrant workers?
One is help them to choose their migration path in a safe way and pay them well and give them safe environment. And if there is any issue and challenges and difficulties, listen to them bring them in the policy discussion table, and also, you know, whatever policy, you know, being made to address those issues and implement that. I would mention here many migrant workers and survivors around the world. They don't have platform, and having platform like Global Migrant Worker Network is a key. And I would encourage everyone to, you know, join and listen to us, and also see our website, and also support us. And also, you know, if you look in Middle East and Gulf, people, they talk about sport, and, you know, either World Cup or Asian Cup and any kind of a game. But we shouldn't forget, you know, those stadiums and those road and those building is built up by the migrant workers, and their blood is attached with that. And we should also not only, you know, celebrate about, you know, what is sport, and I encourage, you know, fan not only look the, like, you know, their players, and also look the, like, you know, behind the scenes and who made that stadium and who made that infrastructure.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I guess there's this aspect of when we look around us, we should remember the role that migrant workers have played in a lot of the things around us and a lot of the things that we enjoy, like sports, like you said, because the truth is their labor is really what holds us up in many ways.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah, perfect. Okay. Yeah,
thank you so much for having me. It was, you know, a joy talking with you, and thank you so much for helping us to, you know, share our message, and also you know, thinking about us.
Yeah, thank you so much for joining today.
That was Mahendra Pandey, the Senior Manager of Forced Labor and Human Trafficking at Humanity United, and Rabble's labor reporter, Gabriella Kaluge-Kasuga, in conversation. Thanks so much for that, Mahendra and Gabby. Switching gears now, let's review the top stories on Rabble.ca in a segment we like to call In Case You Missed It. Let's jump right in. This week in Canadian politics, Lytle Kaiken shares a feature piece on Rabble.ca covering Capital Pride events, which took place last week in Ottawa. This year, Capital Pride dealt with a withdrawal of political and corporate support in response to their firm solidarity with Palestine and the inclusion of Palestinian activists in their event. In this feature piece, Kaikan outlines the organizations who withdrew from this year's festivities, as well as spoke to those who showed up proudly with pride, such as Iso Seidel, a member of Independent Jewish Voices, who marched at Capital Pride and spoke to Kaikan. They said, quote, "As a queer and trans Jew, it is incredibly disheartening to see fellow Jews attack and harass our queer community organizers for taking a principled stance on the side of human rights," end quote. Also this week, columnist Shreya Kalra is criticizing Ontario Premier Doug Ford and his decision to end the funding of consumption treatment services. 10 of the province's 23 supervised consumption sites are set to close due to their proximity to schools and childcare centers, with no promise of being funded if they decide to relocate. In her column, Kalra shares how, in addition to how harmful Ford's rhetoric has been about these spaces, closing them will only exacerbate the problem. Studies prove safe consumption sites prevent overdose deaths, provide people with health care and treatment, reduce public drug use and discarded drug equipment, and reduce the spread of infectious diseases. Kalra writes, quote, "Safe consumption sites should be seen as society's offering of care and compassion to people suffering. These sites aren't the only solution, and we need more affordable housing, treatment, and recovery support services. But shutting consumption treatment services definitely takes us further away from the solution." And finally, in labor news this week, Gabriella Kaluge-Kasuga shares a new survey conducted by Nanos Research for the University of Ottawa's Positive Energy Program, which shows Canadians are hesitant to invest in clean energy, citing the affordability crisis and concerns about the price of energy they may have to face. But experts say affordability and the climate crises should be tackled in tandem. Alex Callahan, the Canadian Labour Congress's National Director of Health, Safety and Environment, says workers have been long calling for policies that tackle both climate and affordability issues. Callahan also said workers have been calling for more investment in creating well-paid green jobs. Callahan highlighted that better jobs and wages can help address the affordability crisis and ensure people have the funds to make green choices. As well, governments can adopt policies that make these choices more affordable. As always, you can read all of the stories we talked about today on rabble.ca. We're coming to the end of our episode this week, listeners, but the last thing we want to leave you with is this. Rabble.ca and the Institute for Change Leaders are proud to announce that we are now accepting applications for the 7th Annual Jack Layton Journalism for Change Fellowship. Here to share a bit about her experience with the fellowship is last year's fellow, Madison Edward Wright.
Hello, my name is Madison Edward Wright, and I just wrapped up my stint as the Jack Layton Journalism for Change Fellow at Rabble.ca. As the fellow for 2023-2024, I got to spend 4 months focused on reporting on labor, human rights, Indigenous activism, the 2SLGBTQI plus community, and much more. I was constantly encouraged by my editors to pitch stories, work on securing my own interviews, and be creative with how I approach reporting. It was the perfect environment for me as a beginner reporter to familiarize myself with the functioning of a newsroom, as well as the teamwork required to run a successful publication. From podcast episodes and writing quick hits to delving into a long-form piece that was published at the end of my term, the editorial team always had my back and was willing to discuss ideas. I learned different ways to approach stories, how to dig deeper when sources were hesitant to speak with me, and even pushing through writer's block, which, you know, of course hits all of us at different times. Overall, this is a great experience that I cannot recommend to another journalist more strongly. It's a great team, and you're going to love it.
To learn more about this fantastic opportunity, please visit Rabble's Jobs and Opportunities page or rabble.ca/journalismforchange. And that's it for Rabble Radio this week. Thanks as always for tuning in. If you like the show, please consider subscribing to Rabble Radio on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts. And please rate, review, share Rabble Radio with your friends. It takes 2 seconds to support independent media like Rabble. If you have feedback for the show, ideas, stories, opinions you'd like us to cover, we'd love to hear about it. Get in touch with us anytime at editor@rabble.ca. Thank you to all the journalists and writers who contributed to this week's content on rabble.ca, and thank you to Carl Nirenberg for supplying the music. Lastly, thank you to you for tuning in to Rabble Radio. I'm Brianne Doyle, and I'll talk to you next week.